morning, James.
Good morning, Greg.
Were you out again at the opera last night or anywhere else cultural?
No, I had a business meeting with my cobbler.
Ah, good, good. You working on that second closet? More shoes?
Yeah, we are. Yep, we are. It's the market for good Italian shoe leather is drying up, so this is a real, real issue we have to deal with.
Drying up, really? So brief housekeeping this morning. We have an Ernestus sighting, which is very exciting. We still have not seen a download in Lithuania in quite some time, but Ernestus liked one of our Facebook posts. So summer home, maybe somewhere else. We just can't get a beat on where he is right now, but we're thrilled that he's still paying attention.
I want to go with either vacation home in the Seychelles or his villainous lair on some volcano somewhere.
Nice. Nice. We need to hear from you, Ernestus. Drop us a line. We're curious what's going on with you. Patreon. We launched our Patreon account last week. We've got a couple of sponsors already. Thank you very much. If you've hopped in to join, please check out that page. It's patreon.com/hopnology. I do posts after we record each time. So, James, I don't know if you saw last week, but I was making fun of you something fierce. So I'm going to continue doing that on a weekly basis and give our insiders a little view into how we make the sausage.
Ah, nice. Yeah, you didn't need to say that.
Yeah, I know. It's too early for that. and I do have to ask you, so last week, you know, probably of the most major pivot point we've had in our show's history is that we dropped the Friday haikus from our Instagram feed.
And I saw that.
We had our first limerick. So let me have it. You know, I can take it. I'm a big boy. What did you think?
I didn't look at it.
Oh, for the love of God.
So I'm going to go with good.
Oh, you know, that hurts. That hurts deep. Real deep.
I had cobbler issues, dude. Okay.
Oh, man. Okay. I got to see what's on your Instagram feed. Just, I'm worried about you. I am.
But I assume all went well. No, I'm teasing you. I did look at it. I liked it. I just, people have to get that limericky rhythm in their head. And,
that is the hard part. And I had discounted the fact that, you know, haikus, you don't need to rhyme anything. They're a little easier that way. So I've got my rhyming dictionary bookmarked now. And,
Oh, that's so funny. If there was a spreadsheet for this, you'd have that up.
Oh, too. I would. I absolutely would. So that has been fun. And as you mentioned the other day, you know, maybe at some point we'll get into, you know, interpretive dance or something like that down
right,
the road.
Exactly.
I've been told I have a voice that's perfect for mime. So
you do have a voice perfect for mime.
So that may be something in our future.
Yeah, what I don't need to see is you in a black leotard and white face. That is not
going
to happen.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely not going to happen. That's
okay, back on track. Oh, focus.
Okay, we have a guest this morning.
We do.
So a few weeks back, for our listeners who are listening on a recurring basis, you may have noticed, we kind of started talking about questions we'd had from listeners, and we had a question from Mark at Mountain View Hops in Virginia, and throughout the course of the episode, we were kind of teasing that, oh, hey, he's going to be our new sponsor. We're going to keep on promoting him, and eventually he's going to have to pay attention. Well, guess what? He paid attention. He's not a sponsor, but he has agreed to join us for the morning and chit-chat about his hop farm, which, as we talk about the last couple of weeks in particular, pivot points and how you start up and how you grow and how you see what's working and what's not and how you treat it as a business. Conversations we've had with Mark over the past couple of weeks show that he's on track and he's doing some interesting things. So we wanted to bring him on and let him tell you for himself. So, Mark, welcome to Hopnology.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, James, for having me on.
You bet.
Absolutely. We're thrilled to have you here. So if you could, we're going to hand the mic over to you and just give us a quick rundown on how you got to this point. I know the hop farm is only a couple of years old at this point, but where were you before this? What brought you into hops? And tell us a bit about the business.
Well, so far, for over 15 years, I'm still currently doing it part-time. I was an automotive technician, automotive mechanic. And so I'm still working at that same garage that I worked at before, just part-time. They're real kind enough to let me work there during the summer months, just 2 days a week. like 8 to 1, and then during the winter months like now, I work 3 days a week, 9 to 4. So it helps provide a little bit of steady income on the side. But hops growing kind of started out as a home brewing experience. Found a few couple varieties of hops and started planting them, and then I found a whole bunch more of hops. And next thing I know, I look out the window and I'm like, oh shit, this is bigger than a homebrew hop yard. What the heck am I going to do with this? So I was like, well, what can I do? Maybe I can make some money on this. So I looked at selling the cones to some local breweries. And within a few hours of researching, I quickly realized that, nope, I'm not going to make any money selling cones to breweries. So that turned into looking at maybe hop plants, running a hop nursery. So we spent a year looking into that, testing, cutting, seeing if we can root them and all, and getting our nursery license, and sure enough, we did. And so we started there, and now we're currently doing a whole bunch of different things that I'm sure we're going to get into here in a little bit with hops, other than just breweries. But yeah, that's my business right now, and we're very diverse in what we do.
Very nice. I think it's so interesting that you did the research, and you saw very quickly that whole cone was not the way to go. And you know, for folks who listened last week in our talk about, you know, continuing to throw money at something, you didn't go that normal path of, okay, I'm going to grow more, I've got to pelletize to break through this market barrier. Instead, you took a turn and went a different route.
Absolutely. I knew that very early on that in order for me to survive growing hops on a quarter acre land, I was going to have to diversify, period. And so, you know, I know how you all talk about that nice triangle where you have your brewers, your growers, and your consumers all connected. And our current business model places us directly in the middle of that triangle, where we supply brewers with different varieties of cones that they can use. And we also supply wineries and recently here kombucha for hop kombucha. And then we supply growers with different varieties of hop plants. And then also the studies and things that we're finding out at our hop yard, that information passed along to them to help them in this area grow some hops. And then consumers, yeah, we're selling cones, plants, hop soaps, hop candles, hop ornaments. I mean, anything kind of hop related to farmers markets, retail stores, and other festivals we do.
So I have a question for you too here, Mark, that when we were talking last week about the early phase, seven phases of basically how to wreck a hop business. You know, when everybody starts in the experimental phase, no matter which direction you're going, and it sounds like in that experimental phase, you really did poke around and you looked at multiple opportunities and you decided upon, let's say, a non-traditional view of being in the hop production industry, right? So most folks, as we said, Greg said, you're going to drive towards making hop pellets, or you're going to look at the brewer as your single only source of revenue generation. And actually, that's like the lowest margin you could possibly go for is the brewing industry. and it's just the way it is. It's a volume market. Even though quality is important, quality doesn't, there's no way to metric quality and attach in higher value to it right now. Yet we're working on it. But this idea of saying, what else is in my sphere of influence that I know about, can I tap, that meets my requirements for, you know, a good business enterprise? And so when you were looking at like growing plants and doing all these other things, at what point were you looking at those, did you say, yes, this is something that we are going to do and be in it? And what other things did you look at where you said, no, we're not going to do that?
I think that we are still in the beginning learning phase. So I started growing hops in 2016, and we started the business about January, I think it was last year. So we are only just under 2 years in, and we are still in the experimental phase of trying new things, expanding that market and learning what works and what doesn't. And I think we're right in that moment. As far as things that don't work, we have put out some other little items here and there at our markets to test. And I usually start small, just a handful of items. And if they don't sell worth a darn, I just don't do them. So, yeah, mm-hmm. we're still in that experimental phase. I mean, let's face it, where I'm at here in Southwest Virginia, there's no hop growers. I own mm-hmm. this niche in this little region where I'm at. There are a few other growers farther in Southwest and Central Virginia. And I think at last recording, there was only maybe 50 acres worth of hops in the whole state. So where I'm at is a very specific niche, and I can do just about anything I want hops related to experiment and see where the market goes.
And do you feel that given your, you know, relatively new exposure, but yet I would say you're probably a leader, certainly in your state, if not your local area, and what you're, you know, in the hop industry. Greg and I think it was off mic last week or the week before, we were talking about things that infuriate us about about business and the concept of failure, right? So I tried this and it failed. I tried a new market and it failed. And so we pivot. I don't think that's fair. You have to try things. Some things are succeed more than others, but if you don't try, you're never going to know. And what's the early indicators for you when you're trying something new, when you're probing a new market or a new product? How does it have to look to get you excited about moving forward?
Bottom line, money. Sure. Honestly, that's a very varying question because, you know, not only am I growing plants and testing different varieties over at our hop yard, but I'm also testing merchandise, the plants themselves growing. I mean, that's a very broad question. So, you know, as it pertains mm-hmm. to the, we'll call it the secondary market sources, where like hop soaps, hop candles, things like that. But the biggest mm-hmm. indicator for me is, does it sell? I mean, what do people want? And like I said, I put out a handful of things. I'm not afraid of failure. I put all this testing and research on the website there for anyone to access. And if Mountain View Hops is to be an example of what not to do, then, you know, that's information too. So, but we're trying not to fail, not to do things wrong. We definitely want to improve in multiple areas and get better. But, you know, like you've all said before, finances are a big thing, and you have to measure your finances with what you're doing and everything. But back to your original question. So when it comes to growing the plants, testing different varieties, I will wait 3 or 4 years before making a determination on most varieties, whether they grow well in our hop yard or not, because it takes 3 to 4 years. And if you just plant one and then in 1 year you rip it up, how are you going to know?
Right.
So, yeah, you do have a little bit of loss, a little bit of failure sometimes in your finances of sprays and fertilizers and time and everything else doing that. But in the end, it's information that can be provided to other people. So I hope that somewhat answered the question.
Yeah, that cost is something Greg and I refer to as tuition.
Because education is expensive.
It is. And I think we talked about it last week. All these things are blurring together now, but the concept of, you know, we're competing. Who are we competing against? And we're competing, if you're selling hops to brewers as your primary revenue generator, you're competing against people and families and enterprises that are multi-generational, and they have paid that tuition over and over again years ago. And we can't expect to catch up to that. So, but we also can't be naive in the fact that it's going to be very expensive for us.
So, and it's going to take a lot of time too.
Yep, yep. So I think that's one thing people maybe get frustrated in those early phases. And when it comes to a pivot point, if they're stubborn, bullheaded like I am, they're going to say, damn it, I'm going to do this. And instead of saying, well, maybe I should pivot and take a look at something else. What is my risk tolerance? I have a very, very high risk tolerance, as all my business partners know, and way higher than any of theirs. So I need to be headed off every now and again.
Yeah, high risk tolerance can sometimes equal stubbornness if you're not careful. And we used the phrase last week, cognitive dissonance, you know, persistence down an ineffective course when you're just convinced that you're right.
And it's like you.
But we're not talking about you, James.
No, well, but it's the truth. And it's funny because it's true. And I'll be honest, I mean, ego plays no small part in that. but anyway, back on topic. So I was looking at your website this morning. You're doing plants, which for us was a fantastic revenue generator. If you can get your system dialed in, it takes a little while, but I think it's quicker. How do I say this? The number of opportunities you get in a propagation turn to learn more and apply it to the next round is way faster than growing hops, for brewing. So I think you've got an opportunity there to make an impact. And you know, I saw your hop soaps and hop candles and things like that. Where are you selling those? I mean, where is your market?
Right now, for the hop soaps and hop candles, the farmers markets have been the number one revenue generator for that. Mm-hmm. Our second is we've got about 3 or 4 retail markets that we're selling them in locally in several cities around the area here. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing we look to expand this winter. We'll get our retail markets expanded. We might want to do a little bit more with the farmers markets if time allows.
Mm-hmm.
But that is the number one revenue generator so far. The first year we just did plants, and that did us pretty good. And then we, last fall we branched out into the hop soaps, and lo and behold, we've got a great recipe for the soap and people absolutely love it. This year we just recently, about a month ago, started doing the hop candles, and mm-hmm. they are selling like hotcakes too. So people are really interested in this hops thing. 90% of what I do at these markets and these festivals is straight up education. What are hops? That's the number one question I get. What are hops? And then you tell them, you know, they typically go in beer, and they're like, oh, their eyes light up, and then you start talking and start a conversation with them, and they end up buying a couple bars of hop soap and maybe a candle or something, and, you know, it's a really unique thing.
There's no denying that hops are sexy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And, you know, I've been wondering, and I think you just answered the question I had without realizing it. And as you've been talking about farmers markets and about plants, I've been thinking to myself, okay, you're also still working part-time. What's the labor for this? Are you going to every farmers market, or are you handing them off to someone else to sell? But it sounds like you've got feet on the street. Mm-hmm. For the most part, in this entire endeavor, which is a lot of labor. We've talked frequently about the cost of labor.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. I'm currently not making a whole lot on the labor aspect of it, but we're now at the point now where we're actually starting to pay back the money that we've spent in the fungicides, the fertilizers, the poles, everything else. So we are now mm-hmm. just at that point of being able to pay that money back, which is good. But yeah, I do go to most all of the farmers markets and the festivals, and I visit all the retail shops. So yeah, it is a lot of time, a lot of work. My parents, they're very kind in helping me out. It's a family business, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's ended up happening now, my mom and my dad actually do a lot of the soap making, and I help them wrap it and everything. I make the candles and do all the other stuff, hop yard related. So that helps split it up a little bit to help me manage my time better. And then when I've got family things I need to do, they're willing to do some of the farmers markets. So that really helps.
Excellent.
Do you foresee having to bring on employees and take this up a notch?
That's my hope. I mean, last year, without giving any business financials out, we did X number of dollars. And this year we will be almost right at, if not at, 8 times what we did last year. And projections for next year, based on what we're doing now and some expansion ideas for other markets, we should do double that, what we do this year. So the money is really doing well. And, you know, we want to talk about expansion too. And what we're doing this year, at the end of this year, we're ripping out some of the varieties that are not doing well. We've 3-4 years now, we've got enough data to say they don't work.
Good for you.
Yeah, we're ripping those out. I hated to do it, but hey, they ain't making any money, so rip them out, and we're putting in or expanding those varieties that are growing well and that the breweries, the wineries, the kombucha, everything like that actually want. So maybe we can make the yard more profitable, because we do get kind of 2 harvests in a season. So the first harvest goes to the breweries and all those using them in beverages. And then the second harvest is what we use for our cones, hop soaps, candles, things like that. Just are not quite up to par aroma and flavor wise to go into beer.
Mm-hmm. So, is your brewery market primarily wet hops, or are you drying them?
We do both. So I work with my brewers and wineries during the winter months to say, hey, this is what we're going to have, this is what you want. And they do take some wet hops. There's a few varieties they like to have wet. Others, since they can't use them right away, they prefer dry. And so I've got a room down here in the basement of my house. Here we go to the homebrew level. But it's a large screen that I lay them about 1 to 2 inches thick, dehumidify the room to 35-40%, heat it to 85-90, and I got two fans that blow air on it, and I can have them dry it in 2 days.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I mean, something important to mention there is, as you were, I could tell you're like, this is kind of homebrewer level.
I know, but, you, James.
But it's important to note that scale is irrelevant if you understand the process and why you're doing it the way you are, instead of just copying somebody else. So I'm less concerned about your scale and more concerned about that you understand the factors that go into determining how you're going to set up your system. So don't be sheepish about, you know, I only have a little homebrew set up. That doesn't matter, because I have seen giant operations that just copy the guy next door and they have no freaking clue on how the system works. So don't worry about that.
Thank you so much. That makes me feel a whole lot better, especially talking to you, James.
Learn the why things happen, mm-hmm. and then learn how to, you know, improve them or make them impactful for your situation. So,
and that's exactly what we're trying to do. Go with this. We're not trying to take this balloon and blow it out so fast that it pops.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see this thing grow, but I want to see it grow at a measured rate so that we can do the processes and improve correctly and work to being better quality than we are now.
Right.
And that really shows what you share all of your research on the website and your observations. The other thing that struck me with the website, I have to be honest, I was almost surprised when you said that you sell to breweries, because, you know, so often, James mentioned before, hops are sexy. Folks get into this. The stereotypical thing that we hear is, I was a home brewer, I grew a couple plants, it was cool, I grew more, I wanted to be in the beer business. And the word beer tends to overshadow the word plants in their description of their business model. Mm-hmm. Going to your website, it is clearly an agricultural company, and one of the industries happens to be the beer industry that's being serviced. But I encourage folks to go to your website and take a look at that, because you are running an agricultural business. You're not in the beer industry and have, you know, a hoe and a tiller out in your backyard, because that's how some of these small startups sound.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an important designation to make, because one of the signs of success that we've seen over the years is having that farm focus and being more concerned about that aspect of your operation and less concerned about how many cool beer events do I get to go hang out with the brewers in. So if that's the primary goal and one of your pillars of your company, you ought to probably rethink your business plan. But, you know, I can't tell you what to do. Well, I try, but nobody listens, so it doesn't matter. Right?
Yeah,
right? It's funny because it's true.
Yeah. I mean, as a micro or nano hop grower, you've got to diversify. And you've got to look at all avenues of financial income.
You mentioned that you're taking down certain varieties and putting up others, and without betraying your market plan, you do have an interesting collection of varieties right now. You're doing a couple of New Zealand varieties, which are New Zealand specific because they only grow there well. And, you know, your highlight there, it looks like, is the Canadian Red Vine, which is also a very interesting and not a common variety that we see in the U.S. So I'm curious how you ended up in some of those spaces.
So a lot of it goes back to the homebrewing deal. I was like, oh, you know, read these descriptions. This looks like a good one. I might throw this in my beer one day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really how it goes down. Just, will this taste good in a beer or not? You know, what I would use it for? And so anyways, that's how we started. Just threw a bunch of varieties out there. And I knew from the get-go that some were not going to make it and some would, but I thought I'd try it anyways.
Does anything make a spectacular candle, but not so great in terms of the brewing sales?
Honestly, in both the soaps and the candles, the aroma and the You're not going to get flavor because who wants to bite into a hunk of soap? But anyways, flavor, aroma wise.
Have you seen some of the beers that are being made lately? You might be surprised. If you put enough lactose and candy corn in it, anybody will bite it.
That's a whole nother subject about cans and sticky labels and product marketability. Yeah, that's a whole nother label or level. Yeah. Anyways, real quick, if you're going to take pride in something you do, try to do it and make it look good, you know? Yeah, we do grow some New Zealand varieties, but I will caution people, they are very susceptible to downy mildew and crown rot.
Oh, yeah.
And they grow very well. They're growing 25-foot good yields for our area, relatively speaking. But, yeah, you got to be careful with those on the downy and the crown rot. You're going to have issues.
While you can keep them alive, they do well.
Yes, exactly.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, and we had that issue with some that we were growing here in Wisconsin that grew just fine in other places in the country. And, you know, I think that comes back to why you are trialing these. And, you know, Greg, I was thinking, because he's given such a good eye to what the varieties perform well there, we ought to see if we can get him some top secret from Dr. Holly at Virginia Tech.
Ooh. Oh, that's a great idea.
I noticed because, she was growing that.
Yeah, so that she sent me a text last year or this year at harvest, took a picture of those plants, and she said, "Are you kidding me? Look at these things!" And they were just enormous and giant, full giant yields. I said, "I told you so."
Yeah, they do grow very well.
So see if you get some of those, couple of those rhizomes to see how well they do for you in your region.
Okay.
So where do we want to go next?
So what's the longer term plan? I mean, as you said, you've only been a couple of years in and things are growing well. You're on a quarter of an acre, but it is a family business, so you do have limitations in terms of resources. Is this the model? Are you there and this is great? Are you thinking, you know what? You know, in 2 years, if things continue at this scale, we're going to go to 5 acres. I mean, do you have a plan, or are you just enjoying the ride right now?
I'm enjoying the ride, but there is a plan. So yes,
that was the right answer, by the way.
You say a plan? That's crazy talk.
I can still see the train tracks being laid, so we're in good shape at the moment. But yeah, there is a plan. I would love to be the first hop farm to grow 50 acres of hops in Virginia, but. Right now we do, the family homestead has about 36 acres, of which is probably about 10 acres worth of farmable land. So I could increase to 2 or 3 acres, but the problem I'm going to have on that piece of property is irrigation. We just don't have the amount of water. We've got a creek that goes along the back, and I probably could access that and do some, you know, timing in quadrants throughout 2 or 3 acre hop yard to get enough water on them. But if it gets beyond that, I'm going to have to start searching for some land. So I'd say within the next 10 years, maybe 1 to 2 acres. Immediate term is just doing what we're doing now, replace current varieties. You've probably seen on our website, I've got a TP design instead of your standard hop trellis. There's a lot of benefits to that, but there are also some cons. But we live on a hillside. Here in the Blue Ridge Mountains, it's good luck finding 2 acres of flat land you can plant hops on. So that teepee design allows me to work from ground level on hillsides where you might have the risk of tipping over a tractor or somebody standing on high up, you know, trying to string the wires. So, and it also allows me to expand incrementally. Like, I don't have to build an entire quarter acre hop yard to grow X number of plants. I can expand pole by pole by pole in different varieties to expand my hop yard, which will help financially too.
Mm-hmm. When we give workshops or speak at conferences, everybody wants to know about the infrastructure, trellis and irrigation, and they're so focused on the stuff because I think it's easy for them to get their heads around instead of saying you got to understand the biology.
That is so true, because some varieties just don't grow as tall here as they do where you're at. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this gives me the ability to pick, you know, 12-foot poles, 16-foot poles, 20-foot poles, and you can cater each pole to each variety. Mm-hmm. And that's something, you know, a lot of people down here who want to grow hops, they come up to me and just talk about, well, this is how I've heard how you grow. You set up all these poles and trellis, and it's like, oh, wait a minute now. Some of these varieties only get about 12, 15 foot tall. Now, you don't need to put 25 foot poles and spend all that money in poles and wire it on. You can do it a different way and still end up with good results.
Yeah, and I would say, too, that that methodology that you choose for your infrastructure is going to be heavily impacted by what your revenue generation is. So if you're after, if your target is the brewing market, and you know it's a volume game, and it's a your margins are probably going to be fairly low considering some of the other markets you one could go into, you've got to be about efficiency. And so that's going to lead you down one path of field setup and irrigation and just horticulture, as opposed to saying, I've got this other market, which is my primary market, and oh yeah, I sell some to brewers. That allows you several different paths you can go. And I think I just wanted to highlight that for folks so that they know that, well, yeah, James, I have to have this V-trellis in order to get my yields up, and I have to have yields in, you know, you said you guys get 1,500 pounds the acre. Yes, but that's under my system, right? Under my conditions. What works for you?
And that is so important because, you know, I'm 2,600 feet above sea level where my hop yard is. Mm-hmm. But that person growing out on the coast might only be 20 feet above sea level and in sand. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just because something is growing at my hop yard really well or really poorly does not equate that it'll grow the same way in some other part of the state.
Correct. Absolutely. And that's part of that tuition you have to pay.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I'm going to hit the business side of this a little more. So, Mark, I imagine when you sell your soaps and your candles and all that at the farmers markets, you've got your name on there, you've got the website and all that. Are brewers finding you through that, or are folks finding you at the farmers market through breweries that you sell to? Is there any kind of cross-pollination there, or are they really two completely different parts of your business?
I would have to say that there is some cross-pollination, and it's starting to happen now. I'm starting to witness it in my markets and at the breweries. I'm usually getting a lot of people asking me at the markets, are you selling cones to the breweries? And yes, last year we sold it to one brewery, and this season we've sold it to two different breweries, and both breweries have come back with really good reports, and they want to work with us again next year. I think if we can get, again, more cones through our expansion or of the current brewing varieties that are doing well, if we can increase the cone numbers and profits of the yard and give those to the breweries, my anticipation is that once we get to that level, more people will recognize, hey, these are not new hops in the brews, but guess what? They also do soaps, so go over to the market and pick some up.
And are you actually selling the soaps and candles in some of those breweries?
Not yet. We've talked with one of the breweries to do like a collaboration thing with their beer and our soap to make it like a Mountain View beer pop soap. We haven't gotten to the point yet of doing some serious discussions with it just because of time. Both of us are pretty busy and we need to sit down and do that. But yeah, there is room for some collaboration there. One interesting thing with the kombucha that we're starting to work with, because I don't produce enough poundage worth of hops, except for maybe a seasonal brew or like a small pilot batch, what I have found is some of these breweries and restaurants are carrying kombucha. I may not be able to get in that brewery's beer, but guess what? I might be able to get into that brewery simply by going the route of the kombucha into it.
Interesting. And are you making the entire drink yourself, or that's with another company?
It's with other companies, yeah. I do use my hops in my own home brews on occasion when I have enough. But, so far, the last 2 years, my entire harvest has been sold or used, which is good.
That's fantastic. That's all any of us can hope for as a hop grower.
Absolutely. Yeah,
is that
yeah.
there's a market for what you're selling, and that you see there's a market for a little. The ideal situation for any supplier is that you've got a market for slightly more than what you have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Just, and you know, the cool thing is when I started getting in this, I kept hearing from so many people that you're going to have a hard time selling your cones. You can't sell cones. Nobody wants hop cones. They don't want to buy them. I have totally the opposite problem. I can't seem to keep enough in stock.
And when it comes to wet and dry cones, for that matter, we've talked about it before. There needs to be there's a strict adherence to the calendar on that one. When the cones are ready, they're ready, and the brewer's got to be pretty much boiling and ready to go. and drop them in. So you've got a narrow enough crop there that I imagine scheduling those things is, it's not like you're working off of 50 acres where you've got to schedule all of these wet hops all at once. You've got a small window, but a small crop, so that works for you.
Yeah, typically it's only going to be about, at the most, 3 to 5 varieties that they are going to want wet. And you know, this year I think there's only 2 or 3, maybe 4 with good wet. I try to be very critical in making sure I talk to the brewer saying, hey, you know, in 2 weeks, hey, you know, 1 week, guess what? It's going to be a day or two early. We're going to have a rain event. I've got to harvest this. Can you still work with this? You know, communicating with your brewers is extremely key when it comes to trying to harvest wet hops. I can't express that enough. Down here, I have found at our hop yard, we've got 2 windows of harvest. So we've got an earlier set of varieties that come due between July 1st and July 15th. And then a second date of varieties that come due, usually around the 3rd or 4th week of July into the 1st or 2nd week of August. So that's our 2 windows. So some of these brewers have the opportunity to get wet hops and make a fresh hops, wet ale, or fresh harvest ale, earlier than most breweries would be able to.
Oh, nice. Nice. Yeah, that is a benefit of wet hops, certainly. And, you know, it's interesting. I was at a brewery yesterday, which is something that you hear me say pretty much every time I'm on a recording. And this particular one, they have had for years hop soaps as well as hop-laden snacks. There are, you know, pretzels and chips and stuff with hops in them. So they have those at the counter, and they have soaps at the counter. But they had a wet-hopped beer up on the menu, just called Wet. And I was there with a friend who's not much of a beer person, likes beer but doesn't know beer, and said, well, what does that even mean? So I had to explain the wet hop process and all that. But for folks that like beer and really understand the brewing process, I mean, I'm personally a huge fan of wet hopped beers because when they're done right, I tried to explain it to my friend. I said, this should taste like nature.
There's absolutely no way to do that right.
Oh, come now.
I'm just saying. They all taste like lawn clippings.
See, and it's funny because what I said to him was it's got to taste like grass and nature. So we're on the same page there. I happen to like that when it's done properly.
Do you also happen to like litter boxes, apparently? No. Just saying.
I didn't think you brought Captain Bring Down this morning. I thought you left him at home.
He's always there. Sometimes he sneaks out.
Well, I'm a fan of the wet hop.
That's good. You do you, Greg. But you just happen to be wrong.
Yep, 2 against 1, James. I like them too.
That doesn't matter.
There you go.
You should know that about me by now.
I know. You don't give a crap.
It could be 1,000 against 1. I don't care.
Yeah. You know, we did dabble in, I mentioned hop salts and things like that, hop foods. And we did dabble testing it on our own personal level of hop soaps, hop infused olive oil. But when I did some more research, you start getting into FDA rules when you start trying to market that. And that is not something I'm interested in doing to yet.
Yeah,
even dog treats have FDA rules.
And that's something that's really important for people to realize. They're looking at it saying, well, I could market my hop shoots, right? And because they have a lot of value. And we sold a lot of hop shoots. I still have jars pickled in my pantry downstairs. They're awesome. But that's a whole nother ballgame. Yes, hops are a food product, and if you are processing hops for breweries, you have one level of certification that you need, but not all food products fall under the same certification. So when you start doing things like hop packing and brining and things like that, you are the complexity is almost exponential. So, you know, it's like if you're really going to get into that, I would highly encourage you to look for a co-packer or somebody else that could do the packaging for you and has all that. You can do all the market, you can have the recipe and all that kind of stuff, but they're the ones that would do that work for you in small batches.
Yeah, hop shoots fall under that sprout category, and you can make a buttload of money on selling hop sprouts, but guess what? You've got to be careful with your compost application, your fertilizing, your water has to be filtered, and well, there's all kinds of stuff you've got to be careful of, especially in the harvesting and packaging of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Yep. This is, I mean, it's, we've said it so many times, it's all about gathering appropriate information. And, you know, you looked at this, you did your due diligence, you decided that the barrier to entry there was greater than what you were willing to pay, and you moved on to the next opportunity. And, you know, we were using the F word a lot before, and that's not failure, that's decision making.
Right.
It's an important distinction. It's an important emotional distinction. As we see folks who say, well, this is too hard, well, look at it from different angles and try and figure out what the right angle is for you that makes it work.
Yeah, it's not failure. It's just a stepping stone, a learning curve.
So, Mark, this has been great. We really appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. We've asked you so many questions, and I know that you probably have a lot of things you want to ask us as you see things going on your farm. So we'd love to have you back on. What do you say?
Oh, I say let's do it. Anytime you want to bring me on or you want to do this, please, I'm more than happy to do it.
Okay, great. Round two coming your way very shortly, listeners. Thanks.
Yeah, we're still in that experimental phase.